This is where normal comes to die. Mediocrity meets its final demise, and the status quo is unabashedly dismantled. Welcome to Reinvention Radio. Now, here's your host, Steve Ulscher.
You need a mic. We'll see him after that last show. You're lucky you have a microphone.
You decided it was better. I tried to get you a date. That wasn't like, I mean, come on. That was, no, never again.
No, Brian's picking you up at seven.
All right, good. All right, yeah, well, now that my microphone is on, welcome to Reinvention Radio. And this is Steve Ulscher. And along with the round-eyed, eyebrowed, yes, Mary Goulet. And then Buckwheat's in the house as well. Richard O'Day is here. So, yeah, welcome. No, he doesn't have a mic. Oh, he does have a mic. Yeah, that's all good.
He gets a mic.
Awesome, awesome. And so we're going to have an interesting hour here, following up to the Reinventing Periscope. And if you're listening on the podcast, and so it's, you know, obviously you're listening live, you're going, what the hell is he talking about listening on the podcast? So we've got the live radio show, which is what's going on right now. But most of our stuff is done on the podcast right now. So if you're listening on the podcast, make sure you check out the previous episode, which was Reinventing Periscope. And lots of really good stuff there. And thank you, Richard, for sharing all of that wonderful insight. And Richard is periscoping right now and absolutely not listening at all to anything that's going on
over here.
You're watching Brie Olsen. That's what you're doing right now. Or you're watching the guy that's watching Jenna Jameson. That's what you're doing right now. Yeah, exactly.
It's the dark side of
this
world.
It is. But that was really interesting. And I know you had some questions that were kind of carrying over as well. So maybe we'll get to a couple of those. But, you know, one of the things that came up in the conversation was just obviously how all of social media is shifting and how we basically interact, you know, is completely changing almost day by day. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that has definitely been reinvented, and just so you're clear on what today's episode is, we're actually going to bring on Jeff Pryor, who is the author of Compassionate Careers, Making a Living by Making a Difference. And we are going to attempt to be reinventing careers that suck. And we'll have Jeff on in just a few here. But one of the things that I have found to be really interesting, now, I've been married 18 years, so I can't speak to this
which
like,
I still
at
cannot
all.
Figure out
that a woman would actually stay with me for 18 years. Yeah, I know. It's I'm just surprised that my kids have stayed with me. That's more surprising to me. The wife, I kind of get. I mean, I give her a little something, you know, to celebrate every now and again. But the kids, I mean, from that standpoint, I would have, if I was my dad, I would have run away years ago. there's absolutely no doubt about that. Okay, but we're talking about reinventing all sorts of interesting things, and one of the things that I found really interesting. Because I have to live vicariously through the rest of the world here, is the whole way this whole dating thing is going. And Vanity Fair just put out like a huge long article about the new sort of dating apocalypse. Have you heard of such a thing?
What is that?
Yeah, you know, it's basically...
Is it all the apps online?
It is. It's built around all of this fun, like, sort of... You know, it started, I guess, with the Match.com thing, right, way back when. And then the old man decided that he wanted to get in the game, and he did the eHarmony thing. And yeah. And evidently, he got a couple of dates out of that, which was cool. And then, you know, went to Plenty of Fish, and then all of these other
Tinder
sort of...
Tinder and...
Well, that's the app world. So it started on the desktop, right, on the computer world, and then... It moved over into all this app stuff, and now the app is, you know, the app stuff is far, far, far outweighing in terms of the number of people that are using it, you know, the traditional desktop stuff. So anyway, it was interesting because this article was talking about how every single woman that they were talking to for this article was basically saying that they're completely okay now with just kind of hooking up for hooking up's sake. And that kind of surprised me because I really thought that, you know, women were more into the emotional side of the equation and they, you know, they really wanted to have that, you know, sort of that deeper bond, that connection. But evidently women are all about this too. So it's pretty interesting.
Did they give an age demographic though?
20s.
Okay, of course, in your 20s. Instead of going out to the club, you just hit a little...
But I gotta tell you, it's
the middleman,
right? And at this point,
skip all the hair and makeup and fancy dress.
It's like, how do you even? I don't get it because to me, there was like, you know, a courtship that was involved. You get to know somebody, you actually like know their name, you know, and you have like an interaction with this person. Now they're just like swiping left, swiping right, and basically sending a text like, "Let's fuck now."
Wow, and is that really what the article is saying?
Basically, yeah. And so it really surprised me because I didn't, you know, again, I'm out of the loop, like totally and completely, but I didn't realize that, like, they were saying they went to a bar, for instance, and darn near everyone that they looked at in that bar was Tindering as they were in the bar. So in other words, you're standing right next to me.
Yeah.
So instead of just saying, hi, I'm Steve, what's your name? I'm looking for you. And then there's like this GPS kind of thingy.
Yeah,
where,
boom, there she is.
Right. So like basically you can like GPS, I guess. You saw, how old am I, Rich? I mean, I'm super old evidently because like...
You're only 1 year older than me.
You know, it's like GPS nearby people.
Yeah.
So now you can do like a proximity thing. So now you don't even have to like swipe all the way through it and try to figure out like, do I want to... This is like, okay, this person is within 10 feet. Feet. Interesting.
Whoops,
swipe.
Just move to the left.
Right? And so what I'm wondering is, like, do these people even know that they're being rejected 10 feet away?
Well,
you have your picture on there, so...
Right.
Like, technically, yeah.
So, like, you hold it up and you show the person, then you just swipe the other
but
way.
But there are, I know several women that in their 40s, late 40s, that have met somebody
yes,
on
but
Tinder.
Yes, but online, they're 22. So, it's like.
No, on an app, they're 22. Yeah,
okay,
exactly, right? They're 22 on, yeah, on their profile.
Your picture looks a lot different. So, but older women friends of yours are using it as well?
Oh, yeah.
All right. So I'm so out of it.
In a relationship for like months and months and months off Tinder.
Well, isn't that sort of like, I mean, that's not what people are supposed to be doing. They're not supposed to get into relationships off of this thing, are they?
Is it forbidden?
No. I don't know. Like, there's got to be like some rules or something that I'm not aware of. Here's the thing. So Bumble. So evidently this is the new thing.
Who's
now.
That?
Exactly. I just found out about this too in this article. Or not even in this article. I was doing a scope. There I was.
You were on a scope.
I was doing a Periscope and Joshua David Hayward. Yeah, exactly. He told me about it. And he was saying that evidently there's this new thing called Bumble. And on Bumble, it's the women who pick. So it's kind of like the old school Sadie Hawkins dance. So that's what
yes.
I'm coming out with. I'm doing a SadieHawkins.com like right now. And that's going to be the app that I'm coming up with because evidently the women get to pick. So with the other stuff, the men basically swipe and they say, you know, hey, let's go or whatever. And then the women are like, okay, cool. But in this case, the women get to review all of the profiles and then they get to pick who they want to contact. So I don't know. I'm feeling really, but here's the thing, right? So I mean, like today we're going to be reinventing careers that suck. And honestly, you know, when you look at Richard, I mean, obviously, you know, you've got a career that sucks. So this is like perfect for you, man.
Oh,
so
it's beautiful.
You know, so when I was, you know,
I'm just wondering what this compassionate careers book, what he's thinking while he's waiting to come on.
I know.
There.
Jeff,
I know. We're just like, I'm so
Jeff
afraid.
Is like, what are you guys talking about?
Jeff is like, I pulled over to the side of the road. Why? I mean, so now Jeff is like back driving to wherever he's going. Yeah, he's gone.
He's gone.
He's gone. But it's interesting because, you know, the subtitle of the book is Making a Living by Making a Difference. And, you know, I guess when you come right down to it, there's sort of like these, when you have a career that really pays, you know, something forward, right? Then I think you're kind of having this career that makes a difference. I mean, I get that. You know,
yeah.
You're helping people. You're doing. So is Bumble and Hinge, which is another one. And by the way, you're on Grindr, right? So Rich is
oh
on Grindr. So what do you
your
think? I mean,
wife.
Is that
listening to him?
So do you think
luckily
that
she's not right
is,
now?
If no one's listening. Other than Jeff, our guest, who is about to
well,
hang
Brian
up.
Brian Root.
Well, Brian is probably still listening. Are we still scoping? By the way,
No. I got to put the new one on. Top,
you got to put the new one.
Yeah,
all right, I got you. All right, so, but here's the thing, right? So are those sort of technology companies, are they making a positive difference?
In their wallets.
Well, that's what I'm saying, right? So I don't know. I mean, is that, you know, you kind of draw the line where you go, something is just not quite right about this technology. I mean, it just doesn't.
It's crazy.
Maybe I'm just old. I guess I'm
you
just
are.
Old because from my perspective, it's like I don't see how and they've raised millions of dollars and they'll probably sell for millions. I mean, like Snapchat, like didn't they turn down like a $3 billion offer or something from
a lowball offer
because it was too low.
Yeah.
And isn't that basically just like dick pics? I mean, that's like all Snapchat is, right? I mean, seriously,
no,
it's
evolved. It's
evolved to what?
Well,
educate me here.
Mary's looking at me like, don't say it.
No, I want to know. Like, really, like,
I'm
what's
like,
it?
How do I keep this room
is it,
under
all right,
control?
Let's ask this. Is Snapchat now making a positive difference?
Well, it's not the tool, it's how you use it. Right?
But in the beginning, I'm ignoring that.
Hey, was just your mind. Money's a tool, and it's how you use it, right?
You went money there on your own.
So with Snapchat, when it first started, I think people felt, hey, no one's really going to see this for 6 seconds. It's going to disappear. Then they realized, wait a minute. There's somehow that it can be seen.
It's called a screen capture. I mean, that's not a new thing. It's,
yeah, but I think they didn't realize that in the beginning. Oh, my gosh, people can capture this. And so they're a little bit more careful about what they actually put out there.
Some people want to be caught.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's going to be interesting because Jeff's going to talk about compassionate careers and making a living.
That is the roughest segue.
I think that's a perfect segue from careers that basically just, you know, make no difference to careers that, you know, really do make a phenomenal difference. I think I drew it up quite right. I think I drew it up well.
Good, all right, I'm going to go.
Good
with
news,
you.
Jeff. You're going to have some commercials that you can take some deep breaths and gather yourself.
And we can separate these into podcasts.
Yeah, and so it'll be really interesting because this book is based on hundreds of interviews and includes a foreword by Desmond Tutu and a diverse set of testimonials from people like Bill Clinton and Dave Matthews and Santana, et cetera. So I'm really interested to hear more about the book and hear more about all of the findings that Jeff and his partner Alexandra, or Alexa if you know her well, came up with, and what they will be sharing about reinventing careers. And specifically, if you've got a, you know, a career that sucks, then this is an interview that you absolutely want to stick around for. So we'll have Jeff Pryor on right after this.
One person has the power to change the world, impact millions of lives, and leave a legacy for lifetimes to come. That person is you. In the New York Times bestseller, What is Your What?, Steve Ulcher, award-winning author and founder of the Reinvention Workshop, reveals his proven process that has helped thousands of men and women discover, share, and monetize the one thing they were born to do. Grab your free copy now at www.whatisyourwhat.com/free. That's www.whatisyourwhat.com/free.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio with your host, Steve Ulcher.
All right, welcome back to Reinvention Radio, here with Steve Ulcher and Richard Otte, the Periscope. I'm going to start calling you the Periscope Prince. What do you think about that? You like it. He needs a microphone. Can we give Richard a microphone?
I like it.
You like it. All right. So the Periscope Prince and the round eyebrowed eyed Mary Goulet and cousin to Robert Goulet. I'm never going to stop. I mean, we did. If you haven't listened to that, what was that? Reinventing Faces, right? That was
something
episode.
Like that.
Yeah. So if you haven't listened to the podcast Reinventing Faces, definitely check that one out. All right. So let's bring Jeff on, because I am sure that we have either completely lost him, where he's like, I want nothing to do with this show, or he's still there. So Jeff, are you still with us?
Yes, I am, Steve.
All right, good. Yeah, my we got text from our assistant over in Southern Illinois there, and even in Southern Illinois she was shocked, and it was like a shock and awe campaign evidently there in the first segment, because she's we got to reinvent Kelly. That's going to be one of the next things we're going to do, is we're going to do Reinventing Kelly. All right, so Jeff, welcome to Reinvention Radio. Really good to have you on, and tell us a little bit more about this book, Compassionate Careers.
Well, I was searching for a segue and glad you offered one up before I came on. In essence, we found such amazing array of jobs across the country and across the world that many people just don't know exist. So our goal was to bring some life to those jobs, tell a story about them, and help people be introduced to opportunities they may not know about.
Mm-hmm. And so when you started writing this book, is that when the statistics started hitting? Because I know one of the research companies found that like 70, I don't know if it was Forrester or one of those, but they found that like 70-something% of the workforce pretty much loathed their jobs. Was that the impetus for writing this, or did it start long before then?
Well, you know, that certainly played a significant role. And kind of going to work every day, if you don't like what you do or don't look forward to it, that's a sentence. That's not a job. So the idea of finding a job that matters, a job that matters to you, that's that's a pretty high calling.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have an assessment at CompassionateCareersTheBook.org that someone could take. And is that kind of just gearing them up for, you know, what they might like? Or, I mean, how do you find all these different positions that they could?
What do the answers lead to, basically? Yeah, good question.
Well, great question, Mary. In essence, what we suggest to people is they do several steps. One is to check their core. What do they believe in? What do they care about? What motivates them? And it might be something tragic that happened. We call it angst to action. There are people that something went wrong in their lives. It could be a disease or an accident, and they decided that they wanted to be involved in that. For others, it's a matter of expression, like Wendy Kopp that founded Teach for America, just felt that she could do something. And as one young college student, she set the whole educational world on fire. So different motivations for different people, but that central core is part of it. And then, Mary, you brought up the assessment. We think you got to figure out your cause, and then you got to figure out the right conduit, the right organization. And so that assessment helps people understand where the right fit is and what kind of organization would they like to work in, a big one, a small one, entrepreneurial or old school. So, you know, that's part of that whole process as well.
So do you think that in this current job market, if somebody says, oh, I really would like to be in biomedical stuff and save the somethings, that there's enough jobs out there? Because for me, I've been an entrepreneur since high school, and I just keep inventing a paycheck in whatever I love doing. And I think
so you're asking, do you think there's enough jobs out there for people
enough already made jobs, or could they also, with the information they get from you and your book, create something entrepreneurial?
Well, there's a tremendous entrepreneurial strain. It's social entrepreneurialism, and it's one of the fastest growing segments in the United States. But when you just take a look at the general jobs, it was recession proof. The job growth and the salary structures within the nonprofit or cause focused jobs actually grew over the last 15 years. So it's one of the fastest growing sectors of our economy is these kinds of jobs.
And are they on scale with the pay regular, you know, compared to corporate?
Well, yes and no. We've done pay scale analysis, and the jobs pay fairly well. There is a kind of slow start at the front end, and it's just like small, medium, and large business. But people that have analyzed this independent of us say these jobs are decent-paying jobs, and sure, you can get in an underpaying job, but you can also find yourself into a job that you can make a reasonable living at. If you're really going for the gold, if you really want money to be the metric, this is not the field for you. There's other things to do, and you can do those things and still make a difference by the philanthropy and involvement you have. So not to discount somebody who's just purely a capitalist or an economic entrepreneur, we find that young people especially are drawn into this world where they can make a good living and make a difference at the same time.
Yeah, I had at my door a gal who runs the San Diego office of CalPERG.
I thought you were going to say the Jehovah's Witnesses.
I always get those guys. But CalPERG, she was super passionate about the environment and different laws that are in place and trying to change them up or whatever. And she's a young, like, college-age girl. So she's loves her job.
Yeah. Rich, you were gonna say.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Well,
you had your hand raised. I saw that. Thank you for raising.
Guy in the black shirt across the table.
Yeah, exactly. Go.
I was gonna say, I'd imagine that part of what you're talking about here is when people enjoy their job, they don't necessarily have to make as much money to go on more vacations to get away from their job. They don't have to spend as much on therapy. There's all kinds of things that are benefit when you actually enjoy what you're doing.
You're right. There's that karmatic benefit, but you can't spend karma on debt reduction or, you know, buying that house. So we're pushing at the same time that, you know, that these they don't need to be gold star jobs, but they do need to pay well. And so, you know, that's one of the it's part truth, but part myth. And, you know, part of it is we want people to not be put off. We teach college and high school students all the time. They say, well, this is all volunteer and I can't make a living. But no, that's not true. There are, you know, almost 2 million nonprofit organizations and many corporate social responsibility, philanthropy. There's a lot of different ways to get involved and make a difference.
Yeah, and in one of the early episodes, we actually talked about reinventing nonprofits, and we had Andrew Hewitt on from the Game Changers 500. Are you familiar with that?
Yes,
Yeah, so what Andrew talked a lot about are what he calls, and I guess it's not actually his term, but it's what are known as the four benefit companies or organizations or, you know, whatever, you know, word you want to throw on the end there. But the instead of being a nonprofit, they are positioned as a for benefit. What's your take on those?
Oh, it's a horrible brand. As one mom said to her daughter, hey, it says it right in the title, nonprofit. You're not going to make any money working at that. And so, you know, it's not a good title.
Mm-hmm. And there's there's an oxymoron to that as well, because the people who run many of these nonprofits, I mean, they get paid extraordinarily well, and frankly, they should, because when you think about what it takes to run an organization like the Red Cross, for instance, I mean, you got to have some talented people there, and you can't hire talent on the cheap.
Well, they just have to balance out their funds, what they spend and what they earn, so that they get the same budget the following year.
Yeah, I think something part of the like problem that is that so much of the dollar was going towards administrative type costs that people were starting to get a little fed up, where they were seeing that, well, Jesus, if I put in a dollar, then like 60 cents is going to the actual cause and 40 cents is going to the organization.
Right. Well, in this four,
right, and
go ahead.
Oh, no, it's a legitimate concern, and people need to make sure they know where their dollars are going and have confidence in the organization that they invest in. We just know that in the world of moving for benefit, people are the machinery, and we need the best and the brightest. We're facing some big challenges as a world, and we need some. We need to have people working in these fields that are really remarkable at what they do.
So there was an article in the local paper that there's this guy coming up with, I guess it's a study in California that they were picked to do this, something about for community benefit. So companies and people who have businesses can make money, and it can benefit the local community that they're in. So it's just a
right, and
twist on it.
Right. And, you know, there's more and more now where there is a blending of business and cause. And some people are calling it social entrepreneurs, social enterprise. And it's a blending where there's a generation of revenue, and part of that revenue is going into providing a solution to a problem. It's not new. Girl Scouts is the envy of almost every cookie company. If you had all those young girls out there selling cookies as a huge distribution system, so
it's an unpaid labor pool. I mean, what's not to like? You got all these cookie whores out there trying to get their, you know, their gifts and their little prizes. You know, it's like, ooh, I got. It's like you ever go to like Dave and Buster's or like one of those, you know, Chuck E. Cheese guys. Rich, you just said you actually used to work at Chuck E. Cheese. You were the mouse, I think, at Chuck E. Cheese.
I was the mouse
for a while. But you know how like you go there. Well, you don't know. Well, maybe you do remember. But you go there and you spend like $600 on tokens, and you come home and the kids are like, look what I got, and it's like this little plastic, you know, kind of like little thing like they throw against the wall or something. So you know, the point only being that if you can get this unpaid labor force and pay them cheaply, you know, I don't see any problem
and
with
make
that
the cookies smaller and smaller every year.
Yes, they do, but they're less calories, so you know, we can justify that.
All right, coming up on a break.
Yeah, we are coming up on a break here, so Jeff, so stick around, and we're going to talk a heck of a lot more here about reinventing careers that might suck.
You were born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're at a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you were meant and made to do something extraordinary, the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Ulcher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step by step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many get on the right path and be clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step for realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting TheReinventionWorkshop.com today. No more delays, no more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to TheReinventionWorkshop.com. That's TheReinventionWorkshop.com.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio with your host, Steve Ulcher.
All right, welcome back to Reinvention Radio. And we got to bring the mic back up on Jeff as well so we can get Jeff in there. Jeff, are you still with us or you decide you had enough?
Oh, I'm still there.
All right, you are a brave man.
You are a very brave man. We were just talking about that actually on the break, and we were saying, like, you know, do people actually, like, do their research and, like, listen to past episodes of Reinvention Radio so they know generally the kind of shitstorm they're going to be walking into? So have you heard a past episode of Reinvention Radio before you signed up for this?
I have, and I also am a follower of yours, so I'm wary, but still stepped in.
All right, well, I don't feel sorry for you at all. So if you have a certain point you want to make, you better get it in soon.
Oh, it's funny. All right, so obviously, though, okay, you do follow my work a little bit, and thank you for being the one person that does, Jeff. I appreciate that. But as you know, a lot of what I talk about is the whole sort of what is your what, right, equation, and it's really becoming clear on how you are naturally wired to excel. And one of the things that I preach quite extensively is that you should be paid exceptionally well for what comes most naturally to you. And you should never have to apologize for charging what you're worth because, you know, I mean, if that's what the market will bear, then why should you have to turn it down? And if money's not your bag, then, you know, look, give it away and support your favorite for benefit, you know, organization or something of that nature. So what do you believe? Because obviously you're talking about making a living by making a difference. Do you believe, and has your research shown, that there is the opportunity for people to be paid extraordinarily well doing something that actually does make a difference?
Well, the book is based upon research, and Alexandra Mitchell is the lead researcher on it, and she won't let me get away with too many embellishments. So I've had to be grounded in the truth around compensation factors, and it's decent wages. In the most of the case, the jobs pay well, and there's a career ladder. There's opportunities for people, and there are also amazing opportunities for entrepreneurs that want to start their own, and that happens all the time. So you hear about some of them that are big-time breakthrough, but almost everything that is standard for us to believe in today, at some time, it was just an idea that somebody had. So you could take hospice as just one example. It was, you know, or Habitat for Humanity, a couple that just wanted with their church to start building affordable housing. They started an international movement, and there are thousands of people that work in Habitat, and they aren't rich, but they're rich. They make decent living, and they're rich in other ways.
Yeah.
Well, just like apps are being created for everything you can think of, people are able to create, like you said, Habitat for Humanity or any other causes. It takes one person with that idea to roll with it.
Right, Mary, and as you and I was listening to that last segment with Richard, and the whole notion that social is also being very social in terms of the utilization of contemporary technology. So there's been a lot of things generated around people stepping up and expressing concern about an issue or mobilization around an issue. Heck, we were in San Francisco last year, and they wanted to do Make-A-Wish, and thousands and thousands of people showed up for the Batman event.
Oh, yeah, you were there for that? That was pretty cool. You were there for that. Awesome.
Yeah, it was unbelievable. And just the notion that social, along with a really well-run organization, provided this young boy that was facing a life-threatening disease, his wish, which was to be the Bat Boy for the day. And the city just, they did a remarkable job of that. And so it was really fun to see how social media can play such a significant role in these. And as young entrepreneurs, they're more and more using social communication systems to mobilize people and get them excited about things. So there's apps being developed all the time that are for benefit apps as well as
Tinder and other, Hinge and Grindr and whatnot.
Kind of all the throwaway. There's some huge humanitarian and environmental benefits to the social arena as well.
Mm-hmm. So when I've been in radio here for 10, 12 years and focused on mom entrepreneurs.
This is definitely a nonprofit for you, by the way.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So what happened was my show developed from general entrepreneurs into focused mom entrepreneurs. And what we found really interesting is that the moms graduated college, went out and got a job doing whatever they were doing. But then when they had their kids, they wanted to stay home. But then when they were staying home, hubby's looking at them saying, you had a job before we had kids. Can't you go get something part time? So they would come to us and we'd say, okay, start with your experience, your talent, your interest, your desire, and something that you really want to do. And this demographic of women started making baby bags, different products, skincare lines, and some made it huge into stores. So you don't have to just go, oh, I'm going to do something completely unrelated to me. Start with where you've been, where you are now, what you love, and where you want to go. That's just my
That's great
experience.
And so let me ask you this, because ultimately what we're talking about in this, you know, I named it a little bit differently. So eventually, you know, here when we started out, Jeff wanted to name this Reinventing Stewardship, which, you know, I get. But if I don't know what the word means, then I can't quite run with that. So I still really have no idea what stewardship means. So we changed it to Reinventing Careers That Suck, because that I understand. You know how my second grade mind works here. So, Jeff, what I'm trying to understand is that, so if people are in a career that really they loathe, I mean, they don't like going there. And as the statistics show, I mean, we could be talking about as many as 70% and probably more, because the other 30%, like, their bosses were looking over their shoulder when they were answering the questions. So assuming it's 98% of the population, what do those people do to then transition into a career that they find more meaningful? Because they can't quit their day job, right? I mean, they can't give up the check. So how do you recommend that people go about, you know, making that transition?
Well, one example is in the book is a gentleman who got involved as a volunteer. He tested out an organization that he believed in, got to know the inside. Eventually, they were so inspired by his work that they hired him on to be the director. And that is not an uncommon experience for people to get on a board of directors or volunteer to kind of taste the waters of a particular organization or a cause. And if they like what they see, and they start to develop that relationship, and all the while they're starting to develop a connection and a resume, so to speak, and they can then begin to explore whether or not that's the right fit for them.
Yep. So
and we do a lot around right fit. It's just this whole notion that it's a high predictor of whether somebody's going to be successful in any kind of job. So that's why we have the assessment in the book, because we want people to really be eyes wide open, pick your cause, make sure that the organization you're going into is the one that you can flourish in. Or if you create it, you know, what is it going to be like when you invite other people to join you?
Mm-hmm. So CompassionateCareersTheBook.org is where they can find that assessment. Okay, so step one, an idea is, you know, do some volunteering, right? I mean, obviously there's a lot of hours in the day, you've got the weekends, et cetera. So step number one, do some volunteering. That's a good way to get started then in terms of making that transition, you know, kind of dip your toe in the water before you just up and quit the day job and jump in head first. What other ideas do you have for people who want to transition out of what they're doing?
Well, I'd say the second opportunity is for individuals to actually look at how the book is laid out, because there are worksheets and strategies, probably not unlike what you do in terms of helping people strategize about the steps they can take to discover where the real opportunities are. And so for people to look at career services and kind of more traditional ways, but what we do is try to help people sleuth out where those real opportunities are going to open up. You know, you take a look at healthcare as one area, and if people want to get involved in the healthcare arena, there are really thousands and thousands of jobs in that particular segment alone. And so for a level of analysis for people to say, what do I want to do and what does my day look like? What would feel like at the end of the day I was accomplishing something that was of benefit to my community or to the globe? You know, what could that be? And we feel that there's an actual plan that a person can put together to investigate what those options are.
Well, and have you also found that when they start down this road, that maybe it just morphs into something a little bit differently than they originally planned?
Well, sure, and I think that's in the discovery process for, you know, many people, is that you start off with one sense, and as you go along, you learn, and some other options open up to you. And so, yeah, I think that's, Mary, that's just a part of the learning process. Probably not unlike some of the moms that you work with, is that they started off with one idea, and it did morph into another.
Yeah, that happens, yeah.
And so do you think there's still a pretty strong, so I guess, the social stigma, if you will, then, around these nonprofit for-benefit organizations in terms of being, if you will, sort of inferior to the traditional corporate route?
Well, I'd have to say that there is no negative or limited negative about these jobs. Most people view that they're bringing benefit to the world, but there is this pushback relative to the compensation and whether or not that's real. And we think if people started to realize that, yeah, they can do fairly well, then they're going to be more enticed to check it out.
All right, sounds really good. So we're going to take one last break here, and a couple more questions that I know I've got for you, and I think Mary and Richard both had their hands raised as well. So let's keep rocking and rolling here, Jeff, and we will be back with more Reinvention Radio right after this.
Born to do one amazing thing, but most people spend a lifetime trying to identify what it is. If you're in a job you don't like or are unemployed, if you're in a state of transition or just can't shake that nagging feeling that you are meant and made to do something extraordinary, then the Reinvention Workshop is exactly what you need. Led by award-winning self-help author Steve Olscher, the Reinvention Workshop will forever change your life. The Reinvention Workshop takes you step by step through Steve's proven formula that has helped so many people get on the right path and clear about what they were born to do. Take the first step to realizing the life you deserve and desire by visiting thereinventionworkshop.com today. No more delays. No more denial. Reconnect with your true self. Learn to live with purpose and conviction and become who you were born to be. The world is waiting for you. What are you waiting for? Log on to thereinventionworkshop.com today. That's thereinventionworkshop.com.
And now, back to Reinvention Radio with your host, Steve Olscher.
All right, welcome back to Reinvention Radio. And, man, I got to say, it's a pretty interesting conversation, one that's a little bit near and dear to my heart. And by the way, I asked you this before. Have you ever seen Dish Nation? You still got to watch it. You got to watch it. It's like a radio thing. Basically, all they do is they take cameras, they put them in radio stations, show the shows, basically. It's kind of silly, but it's repurposing, right? So
okay.
Every time I watch that show, most of the guys are standing up. You know, they kind of do their thing. I'm standing up now.
I know. Standing up is good. It's good.
I'm trying.
You are?
That's a good one. And yes, I'm happy to see you too. All right. Here, we're with Jeff. And Jeff is like, you know, I've done a lot of interviews, and I don't think I've ever done one quite like this. Jeff, are you still with us, or did we lose you?
Oh, I'm still around.
All right, you're still here. All right, cool. And actually, Rich and Mary and I were talking about again during the break. We actually talked to each other during the break, which is kind of interesting because I know a lot of radio co-hosts, they just kind of look at each other and go, I hate you, on the break. And then they go, hey, how you doing? Welcome back. So we actually like each other.
We just say that when we leave.
Exactly. And we just say it privately to Kelly, and then Kelly tells all of us. All right, so Rich, you had a question actually for Jeff.
Yeah, I did. You were mentioning people getting fairly compensated for this, for not nonprofit, but what was it, for benefit work. Let's get a specific. What would you say something to somebody who's sitting there and thinking, you know, I want to do something, I need to make $75,000, $100,000. What's the most unique thing you've seen somebody do that maybe someone who just thinks theirs is so unique there's no way they can make that much money? What's something unique that makes around that, just picking a number out of a hat?
Well, there's a couple in Denver that founded an organization called Peace Jam, and they got the Dalai Lama to support it, and now they are the organization for the Nobel laureates, the Peace laureates, and they've developed an international school curriculum. And they have literally thousands and thousands of people involved in their the Peace Jam effort, and it's to promote world peace. And you know, they're not rich, but they also have a reasonable life. You take someone like the head of the Nature Conservancy, comes out of Goldman Sachs. He was a senior partner within Goldman and made the transition to the Nature Conservancy. The guy's doing really well. He didn't need to make much more money, but he also thinks that the job he's got now is more complex, more interesting, and it's providing a world benefit to it. So
yeah.
All sorts of jobs. And the cool thing about the book is that there are 80 stories in the book, so almost everything from the little entrepreneur all the way up to, you know, like Habitat for Humanity, the head of it, or the head of Nature Conservancies interviewed. So we have that, plus people like Dave Matthews and Carlos Santana and other performing artists who mm-hmm. just believe that it's critical that people get involved and make a difference in the world.
Well, Jeff,
Dave Matthews.
Let me ask you this. Let me just play devil's advocate here for a second, because you know, when you talk about like the Goldman Sachs kind of guy, and you talk about others that get into this world, you're going to get arguments from folks who are basically going to say, "Yeah, well, look, they can do that because they already made a shit ton of money." So, you know, it's like, oh, they kind of had a. It's like it's what I call the golden shift, right? It's where you want to shift from prominence to relevance, right? And so you find often that these guys kind of wake up and, you know, I mean, call it what you want, but it's basically like, you know, kind of that rich man guilt. You know, you wake up and you go, Jesus, I've got all this money, and on my deathbed, all they're going to say is this fucking guy made a lot of money. You know, and so they kind of get that guilt thing going, and that's when they jump into some of these for-benefit, you know, type of organizations. So you got a lot of folks out there who have made that jump from having a lot of money, so they've got the cushion, to this world. I mean, of those 80 stories, how, as a general percentage, how many would you say had the money before they moved into this type of organization?
Well, probably five, and almost all of the major CEOs of the largest nonprofits in the country oftentimes will have a corporate backdrop. But we have many more stories of people, everyday people, that just felt after 5 years or 10 years in a career that wasn't making their heart sing, that they were seeking out other opportunity, and they didn't have that golden parachute. It was a big risk for them to jump and move into another field, but they decided to do it because they wanted their passion to line up with a paycheck and have a purpose for their life.
Mm-hmm. So of the 80 stories, you're saying only five of those 80 stories that you share in the book, and by the way, if you're just joining us here live. It's a fun day here at Reinvention Radio as we are reinventing careers that suck with Jeff Pryor, who is the author of Compassionate Careers, Making a Living by Making a Difference. So in that book, you're saying that only 5 of the 80 stories that you feature, these are people who actually had money first. The other 75 really had, you know, a tough time scraping a couple dollars together to make a five. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no. I mean, an example is Rick Hodes, who is a spine surgeon, and he's in Ethiopia. He's the only spine surgeon in the whole of the country. And so for 94 million people, he's their doc if they have a spine problem. You know, he probably could have made a huge amount of money in the United States, but he's decided that he finds more benefit and brings more benefit to the world by being a doctor to children in Africa. So, you know, those are the choices that some people make. He's not starving. He's also probably not, making, $1 million a year either. So those are many more of the stories are people like Dr. Hodes who have made those choices, and they're ones that we've heard so many times. At the end of the day, I can look myself in the mirror and know that I'm a person that I'm standing for my principles and I'm doing something that matters.
Yes, sorry, Rich, you're hosed on that, my friend.
All right, Mary. Well, okay. So, do you find that there's a group of a certain age or of people or background that start seeking out this shift and change in their career?
No, it's no age specific. We know that. Because of the research that Alex has done, that the millennials have a huge interest in making a difference with their lives. We also interviewed people that were in their 80s, and they started later on in life. And so we've had people read the book who are 90, and we have a group of third graders also reading the book now.
Wow.
So it's a huge age range.
Yeah, that's awesome. And Rich, you had one more question,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah. When you were studying the millennials, did anything come up where part of why they weren't so attached to the job was because they just saw their parents getting crushed in 2006 through 2009?
And I think that the money chase is something that there's a sense of hollowness about it alone. Again, it's not that they're not entrepreneurial. They want to bring business principles and that kind of competitive aspect into these four benefit jobs, and so they're starting to capture that momentum of restructuring it to be a combination of the two.
Yeah, awesome. All right, Jeff, great stuff that you're doing along with your partner, Alexa there. So again, if you want to find out more information about Compassionate Careers, the book, you can just go to CompassionateCareersTheBook.org. Thanks so much for being on today, Jeff. You know, really interesting. Obviously, you know, I've got my own thoughts around this. And, you know, I think what ends up happening for a lot of folks, especially those who are not just coming into the workforce, but those are, you know, in their 30s, 40s, 50s, I think there's a turning point. Something happens to them, or something happens to someone else, and they basically just say, you know, I've got to do something different.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
you mentioned that, and I think there's a lot of truth to that.
Yeah, I agree, and that's been my experience as well. So the hope is that if you are on a job right now that you're really just loathe, you take a look at where you are, you take an honest assessment, and you basically just, well, you got to look yourself in the mirror, as he said, and know that at the end of your life, are you going to be able to look back and say, I'm proud of what I created? And if the answer at this juncture would be no, you've got all the time in the world, hopefully, to reinvent your career, which right now sucks, but it doesn't have to be permanent. And on the next Reinvention Radio, we're going to have some more fun with Mary and with Richard. We'll talk to you guys really soon.
You just got dismantled. Thanks for listening to Reinvention Radio. For more information about the show and your host, Steve Olshan, visit reinventionradio.com.